Back with you on Thursday, March 11th, 2021, right here on Connecticut Today. In the 4 p.m. hour, we kicked it off with Governor Ned Lamont's latest coronavirus briefing on getting kids back to school, the infection rate in the state, and how we're doing with vaccinations. Also, throughout the show, we had a pretty lively discussion with callers regarding the possible and maybe likely legalization of recreational marijuana in Connecticut. We had a great call from one of our listeners on Long Island who talked about his experience as a medical respiratory therapist administering to patients who have lung problems. He himself was an habitual marijuana user.
Maybe you know, Department of Mental Health and Addiction Services, given the fact that COVID has affected our physical health, that it's also affecting mental health, some comments on that. And Charlene Russell Tucker, filling the big shoes left by Miguel Cardona over at State Department of Education, and here to talk a little bit more about what our schools are going to be like starting in July, at the end of the school year and going forward, and how the American Rescue Plan impacts that. First, a little bit of a COVID update. What you see on this chart, which I think is interesting, is the number of tests is going down. We were averaging or had up to 300,000 tests a week, and now you'll see we're down to about 200,000 or so. I think a lot of the worried well are not quite as anxious about getting tested with quite the same frequency. I think you see the positivity rate staying relatively low. It's not going to go down to zero. People maybe self-select a little bit when it comes to testing. Maybe they, you know, wait until they feel some slight symptoms before they go. But if it was me, and it is, you know, go get tested when you get the opportunity. There's plenty of capacity there. Gives you some confidence, no cost at all, and allows you to see where you stand. Hospitalizations continues to go down, and fatalities down at 9. Which is the lowest, you know, number we've had in some time. So I think it gives you an idea that while the positivity rate is still lingering in the 2 to 3% range, they tend to be sort of a little younger, a little healthier, maybe the folks who are getting infected. And that means our hospitalization and fatalities continue to go down, which is good. Vaccine update. All right. Over half of our people over the age of 55 have now been vaccinated. 76% of the people over the age of 75. Not a big increase from the last, you know, few days when we were here. So that reminds you that, you know, you get up to 75, 80%, it starts tailing off a little bit, which is not a good thing. We're going to have to work on making sure that everybody, especially in these most vulnerable age groups, do get vaccinated. You know, right now where we have demand outstripping supply, we'll relax on that a little bit. 67% of the people 65 to 74 have been vaccinated. So the overwhelming majority of the folks who are most at risk over 65 have now been vaccinated. 32% of the folks 55 to 64, you know, that's up from, I think, 25% just a few days ago. So that number continues to go up. There's still strong demand in that age group, but we'll be letting you know what the next phase is early next week. Almost 30% of all of our adults have now had their first dose, and that's making a world of difference. We still have some work to do. We still have some work to do when it comes to our most underserved populations, the black and brown population. We call them the most socially vulnerable zip codes, the SVI zip codes. We've made a big effort. We got to do more when it comes to these populations, make sure that they get vaccinated. Black and brown populations, you know, most likely to get infected, most likely to suffer complications, most likely to be living multi-generational housing where it's not as easy to quarantine, and often most likely to, you know, be going to work. So we're really making a big effort there. Here's how we're doing. We've broken it down by a category of healthcare provider. Basically, you can see that if 25% is our benchmark, that's the percent of the population and the socially vulnerable. We want to get vaccinated. We've allocated those vaccines to them. Right now, we're at about 20% of that population. Making progress, still have a way to go. You can see on the chart. The federally qualified health centers right in the community, they're hitting their target. Maybe that'll be more of a priority for us. The hospitals with the mobile vans and the telephoning out, making appointments, sometimes going door to door, real outreach, getting close to the 25%, got to do a little better. Local health departments, okay. And the pharmacies, less, 14%. Pharmacies, a little more, you come to us, you make an appointment online. So a little less likely to be able to get that population. So we're working this. We're working it hard. We've got some a way to go. We really appreciate the ministers and other advocates who have stood up talking to your communities. We've got the mobile vans out at your churches after the service, and we're going to get there. Let's move to education. A lot of money came through in the American Rescue Plan and over the last period of time. And previous to this $1.1 billion allocation to the state of Connecticut, we had $492 million that came through in the previous December bill. You know, let's say we have about $2 billion that we do every year in terms of ECS, cost-sharing formulas. So we've got a fair amount of additional revenues we're going to put to work to help the kids. We really are going to think broad and think big, because there are probably our schools have been open pretty much since September. 95%, 98% of them are open for in-person learning now, most of it full-time. But there are still close to 200,000 kids that haven't been in the classroom, feel unsure, feel unsafe, most at risk, mainly in our urban communities. And what you're going to hear from, Charlene in particular, is how our outreach is to these kids and what we're going to do with these revenues to make an enormous difference in their lives, knowing that we want them to be ready to learn in September. And that means getting back together with their friends, socializing, summer camps, and learning to get up to speed. We'll be starting that soon in July, right at the end of this school year. We'll be learning for college credit as well, and summer internships for the older kids, just to get them socializing with their friends and thinking about learning again. They don't need more Zoom. They don't need more computer instruction. I think what we do agree is they need more socialization with their friends, their peers, and mentors and teachers. And that's going to be some of our priority that Charlene's going to talk about. And next is mental health. In particular, as it impacts our kids. You've heard me say before, and it breaks my heart, that those 211 hotlines that we get often are kids who haven't or feel just in stress, who have been isolated for an awful long time. And these are kids that we're going to pay special attention to as we get back in our summer programs and then our new school year. And Miriam will talk a little bit more broadly about the kids and the broader community in terms of what we're doing with the Rescue Act money to do everything we can to take care of this population, help them get back on their feet. We see it reflected in substance abuse. We see it reflected in at least threats or worries about suicide. And these are priorities that we're going to have going forward. I can't think of a more important time. This is what I'm telling the commissioners, to think big in terms of our opportunity to take care of these populations that have been hit the hardest. We're going to be working closely with superintendents of schools, working closely with legislators, getting the chairman of education, the education committees, to give us their best ideas. So we don't have 169, Charlene, different districts all doing their same thing, but taking the very best ideas we can to make sure our kids hit the ground running. Charlene, welcome. Welcome.
Thank you, Governor, and thank you so much for the opportunity to serve our families, our educators, and our students. And thank you for your leadership in this space, because it is so critically important. And as the governor mentioned, it truly is an opportunity for us to think big and to mobilize the many stakeholders and the best that we have offered in Connecticut so that we can address our children learning, we can address recovery, and we can address acceleration. As the governor mentioned, we're bringing everyone together, stakeholders, Where are our libraries or museums? And working with the Office of Early Childhood to think about our summer camps. How do we do this to make sure that the resources are available and the programming is available and available for our kids to certainly participate in? So that is something that we're moving forward with. Also working with the Office of Workforce Strategies, as the governor mentioned, looking at efforts around college credits and also about internships. So those are really critically important. And the governor also mentioned that this is about kids learning in a fun way, which is truly important. It's not about sitting and Zooming all day. We talk to our students, and that is really important. So we wanted to know what they think about their education and what needs to happen. And we heard loud and clear from them. We used a crowdsourcing platform to gather information from them. And back in June, we heard from about 16,000 of them. A couple of months ago, we heard from another 8,000. And the message, listen to us, they say, facilitate social connections, use engaging and fun activities, and help manage mental health. So as we look at the resources that we have, we must focus on the learning recovery. We must focus on also social-emotional learning and safety, which is so critically important. So we will be working with the behavioral health providers. We will be working with our districts to make sure that we have our social workers, our school counselors, our school psychologists, and more partners to be able to support children and families. It's been unprecedented in terms of what not only our students, but also our educators have experienced. And we must make sure that they are doing well in order for our kids to make sure they maximize their learning. So we're really thrilled to be able to work with all our partners. We're bringing you to the table so that we can think, have bold, audacious goals in order to support our children. Thank you, Governor.
Hey, well said, Charlene. Good, you got 30 days. Roll out the plan. I'm looking forward to it. And Miriam, you've been on the front line. Tell us what you're hearing.
Okay, sorry about that. I was on mute. But thank you, Governor, for the invitation to be here and also for your leadership. Commissioner, I look forward to our continued collaborations, and particularly as we're moving forward and looking at ways to address the needs of students. Governor, I mean, one thing that we're hearing just consistently, and we have heard consistently throughout the pandemic, is that the pandemic has been a struggle for young people. Their everyday routine was significantly disrupted. And so many people talk about feeling sort of isolated and feeling alone and feeling disconnected from each other. So we know the return to school is so critical in terms of helping kids to be connected again to teachers, to school programs, to other students. One thing that we're hearing also is even in terms of adults, we're seeing lifespan impacts of the pandemic, and that adults as well experiencing significant sort of anxiety and depression as a function of the uncertainty brought about by the pandemic, whether it be uncertainty related to job stress or uncertainty even related to how their kids are doing. And so we are very grateful for the federal resources that we'll be receiving from the American Rescue Act. It'll be a really important opportunity to work across agencies and to think creatively around ways to address the gaps any gaps that we may be seeing. One area that we know is where there have been challenges, as we've seen, again, young people who've been particularly at risk for feelings of suicide or depression. The additional resources that are coming in will focus on suicide prevention programs and activities. And so that's one area that we'll be working on. There are also resources focused on community mental health programs and initiatives. And we know that's so important. So things like mobile crisis, so being able to work with children or families if they're in distress, and have mobile teams that are able to go out and meet with people if they're in distress. So we'll have resources for that. Also for individuals that are struggling with substance use issues, there are resources to be able to scale up and expand substance use services and supports. So we're grateful for the resources. We know that there'll be significant opportunities to scale up many of the programs and services being administered at our community mental health centers, also our school programs that are addressing mental health challenges. And so looking forward to continue the partnerships to address the range of needs that we're seeing emerge as a function of COVID. Thank you, Governor.
All right, thanks, Miriam. So in addition to Miriam and Charlene, we got the usual suspects and happy to take your questions.
Channel 3 Eyewitness News.
Yes, Governor, it seems as if the demand in this 55 and up tier really hasn't subsided. People are still struggling to make timely appointments. Some people are finding their first dose in May. What impact is this going to have on the next tier that opens up on March 22nd?
Well, we're getting an awful lot of people vaccinated in the 55 and above age group, as you know. And we are getting more vaccines every week. So, Matt, as we said before, don't give up and don't assume you can't get that appointment before May. We're opening up well over 100,000 appointments on a weekly basis. So the trick is to keep coming back until you get a date that's better. And I'm pretty sure that you had the first rush of those 55-year-olds was recent. I think you are going to see a little more opening over the next week or so.
Got it. And my final one here is, you know, as we mark the one-year anniversary of COVID in our state, you know, President Biden, he's going to speak on it tonight. When you reflect, in your opinion, what are some of the things that we got right, and what are some of the things that we might do differently in hindsight?
We were learning on the fly, that's for sure. You saw that picture, we're all standing there in Danbury, nobody wearing a mask, and the president talking about hydroxychloroquine and Lysol. But I think Connecticut learned pretty fast. I think we worked with the healthcare professionals. They took the lead for us. The hospitals were incredibly valuable. I think that was all great. If we'd done everything earlier, it would have been better. Obviously, when it comes to the PPE, there was no stockpile in Connecticut. There was no stockpile in Washington, D.C. And let's face it, we were scrambling. So I wish we had started earlier, but we started as early as anybody.
News 8. NBC Connecticut.
Good afternoon, everyone. For Commissioner Delphin Rittman, as well as Acting Commissioner Russell Tucker, what do you feel like will be the biggest obstacles, challenges, as we transition back to that post-pandemic world?
So, you know, thank you for that question. And we still have, when we think about the families and what they've encountered and been engaged in, the basic thing of feeling safe coming back into a school environment. We're hoping actually that as educators are vaccinated and more families are also in that space, that there will be that feeling of re-engagement to really, as we are addressing social isolation. So working that through will certainly be that something that we have to pay attention to. Our educators or superintendents are working hard as we're transitioning back into more in-person learning and more person density. They're working with that as well, and I think that's going to position us well as we go forward.
Yeah, and you know, and I would add to that. I mean, I think, you know, one thing that I'm hearing is that, you know, people have to work on their comfort level, you know, trusting that, you know, if they're vaccinated and the people they're working with are vaccinated, then with the appropriate PPE, you know, as necessary, that it can be okay to go back into a work setting or okay to, you know, engage with family or friends, again, with the appropriate precautions, you know, once individuals are vaccinated. So, you know, one thing I'm hearing about is, you know, people may have struggles with just managing some of the post-pandemic anxieties around, is it really safe now? Is it really okay to re-engage? And so I think just messaging around that is going to be really important and certainly one thing that we're working on with staff.
Frank on Long Island. Frank, you're on WICC. Hi.
I just want to give you a little bent on this. I'm Puerto Rican. I came from Manhattan. Mm-hmm. And I was raised in the 60s and 70s, so I saw what drugs did to New York City.
Sure.
I recently saw a study from, I don't know if it was Harvard or the AMA, where it showed that drug use, marijuana, alcohol, any of these drug uses, increases the rate of cardiovascular disease tremendously. It's a study that no one knows about. It was on the newspapers for a while.
Yeah.
And it just was hidden, or no one knows about it.
You know, Frank, it's interesting you mention that, because I have seen studies, and these doctors say, hey, listen, let's step away from the fact that marijuana is intoxicating. It does what it does to your brain. These doctors are saying, let's remember, just like cigarettes, Frank, you're sucking this stuff into your lungs.
Right.
And I have seen these studies, some of which, Frank, say that some of the studies say, some don't, say inhaling marijuana smoke is as bad, if not maybe worse, than cigarettes.
But yeah, I agree.
You never hear that.
I smoked pot for 20 years, and now I have CVD. So, there's actual correlation between CVD, cardiovascular disease, and drug use and alcohol.
Now, did you smoke cigarettes at that same time?
No.
Really? So your cardiovascular disease. So your cardiovascular disease. You're confident, Frank, that you can attach directly to smoking weed.
100%.
Really?
Wow. I was a respiratory therapist, by the way. I saw many people die.
I don't mean to laugh, Frank. I'm sorry.
No.
But this story. Wow.
43 years as a respiratory therapist. I saw many people die. And I know that cardiovascular disease is connected with marijuana and heavy alcohol use.
Did you see, as a respiratory therapist, Frank, did you see, or can you tell us, is there a discernible difference in the condition of your patients, those of whom only or mainly did cigarettes, and those of whom who would level with you and say, listen, I smoked a lot of weed, hash, you know, whatever. Did you see a difference?
I'm not sure, because I never asked those questions directly.
Really? Oh.
I did see, the cigarettes effect. I mean, it was every day.
Yeah.
Putting people on ventilators and BiPAP machines. But there is definitely a direct correlation with drug use. If I was someone in his 30s, I would stop right now, because by 50, you will get CVD.
Wow. And
this is a warning.
Yeah, and you know what, Frank? Every time legislators here in Connecticut ask somebody, either in, groups like the American Lung Association, cancer, whatever, well, if we're so against smoking, right, why aren't we putting out the same warnings about inhaling marijuana smoke? And they get a little two-step in the answer. Well,
exactly.
We're not going to weigh in on that.
And unfortunately, it's our people, people of color, they also indulge.
Yeah.
But we have diabetes, and we have other diseases that, will complicate the situation more.
Wow. Are you retired now, Frank?
Yeah.
Oh, good for you. All right. So right now, where on the island are you? What town, if you don't mind me asking?
I'm on the South Shore.
Okay, because I have relatives and friends there all over the place. So.
Yeah, I'm by Bay Shore.
Wow. Okay, can I, Frank, my late in-laws used to live in Bayshore.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. I can name restaurants and street names, but I won't go there. But, I like Bayshore. Nice town.
So. Yeah, it is, yeah.
It is. Frank, thank you. I appreciate it. Hope to hear from you again. Thank you, Frank. Frank on Long Island. There you go. Respiratory therapist, now retired. Said, all he did was smoke weed, and he has now cardiovascular disease. Think about that, though. It's never thought, right? I mean, we had legislators on before, mainly on the Republican side, who actually ask some of these people who come in and testify at public hearings, well, why are you not concerned about marijuana smoke versus, cigarette smoke? And they don't get a straight answer. Forget the intoxicating part of this, folks. Let's put the THC versus alcohol thing aside. You're still smoking. Now, I know there's edibles, and some people say, well, to be better for your health, just do an edible. Okay, maybe. I'll have to bring in those special gummies, put them in the talk studio. Imagine if I bought in gummies, starting, and I'll put them in. Give them to Melissa, give them to Lisa, give them to Eric, the producer, Christian in the morning. Hey, do these have CBD in them? No, no, these are straight gummies. Wouldn't that be an interesting broadcast day?